Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Of course, if you don't hear this show in its entirety, you can always check it out online at WGCLradio.com and on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. We've got a big weekend planned, and I'll be talking more about this later in the show, but we're going to make a big splash next week on Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, the book that David Hayes, myself, and Doug Hughes wrote, a resource for those adults ages 50 and over. That's going to make a big splash next week on Glass in the Morning as they're going to start giving away some books. So I'm going to say that this week's News of the Week is brought to you by Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults aged 50 and over. How much cash should you keep in the bank? Everyone has an opinion on how much money you should tuck away in your bank account or under your mattress. The truth is, it just kind of depends. I mean, most financial people will suggest that 6 months of expenses is what you need to keep in savings. Now, I will tell you, for a lot of people, let's say if you're retired, I usually suggest around 5% of your assets. So if you have $100,000 of investable assets, keep about $5,000 in the bank. That's normally enough, as long as you have access to the money. And sometimes now folks will argue, hey, I have a line of credit, or I have other access to money in a short pinch or a short term with a short-term need, and they can go there. But I did run across something I thought I would share. You know, most of us do not have budgets. We think about it, we talk about it, but we never get around to do it. I ran across the 50-30-20 rule, and I think it's pretty good. You know, if you look at that, you think, okay, 50%, that's going to be for my fixed expenses. You know, the things like your monthly bills, electric bills, mortgage payments, you know, things like that. And then 30% for discretionary spending. You know, it's just eating out, doing the things you want to do, going to the movies. And then 20% towards tithing and your financial goals. And if you do it that way, it seems to work out pretty good. I know financial guru Dave Ramsey, of course, has been a long-time person here on WGCL, has a different take on how you should carve up your cash. I think you could go check that out as well. You know, I was looking at the personal savings rate, and we're going to be talking about that in just a little bit. People don't save enough money, but in fact, if you look at most Americans, 47% of Americans, according to NeighborWorks America, would have all of their money gone in just 90 days or less if they did not have any type of income coming in. You know, over half of Americans are passing on the stock market. And this is a time when the U.S. stock market's flirting with all-time highs. More than half of Americans are just standing on the sideline. Now, Bankrate.com says that 52% of those people said they don't have any money to put in the stock market, which, you know, that makes sense. But the other ones, they don't believe in it. They don't trust it. They just do not want to put it in because, you know, they might lose it. And, of course, coming off the tech bubble and burst of 2000, the financial crisis in 2008, for some, you just can't blame them. Well, economic growth data suggested the economy might have slowed at the beginning of the year. After a strong third quarter in 2014, the economy lagged in the first 3 months of the year, clocking in at just 2.2% growth. The economy grew 2.4% in 2014, and that was up from 2.2% in 2013. Now, we do not have an official first quarter GDP number yet, but unofficial estimates suggest that economic growth may have ground to a halt in the first quarter. Now, 0% GDP is good news, of course, but keep in mind, don't forget, last year the economy actually shrank, went backwards 2.1% in the first quarter of 2014. Then it rebounded to grow 4.6% in the second and 5% in the third. There's no guarantee, of course, we'll see a repeat of last year's trend, but sometimes warmer weather tends to translate into stronger consumer spending and housing market activity. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start with that with Rod Holloway. He's going to be with us for the very first segment of the show. And then I'm going to talk a little bit more about the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, and also have a little giveaway for folks. And then later on, Doug Hughes, co-author of the book, will be calling in. He'll be on the road. We're going to discuss the path of life, you know, just the path of life that as it moves along. Sometimes things get in the way. We call them oil slicks or ankle biters in our office. And we're going to just kind of talk you through that normal progression of life and the things to kind of look out for. And then later on, I'm going to talk about demographic truths, you know, the predictable spending patterns. It's going to be a great show. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I know last week was the investment show. We spent a lot of time talking about investments, but you know, as this week kind of unfolded, I thought, you know, let's have Rod call in and give us a little update. And Rod, you know, as GDP numbers start to roll out, it's a little bit unsure what the first quarter looked like. I know a lot of people are suggesting we could have been flat for the first quarter of the year, but I don't think people need to get too worked up about that, Rod, because last year we actually went backwards over 2% and then came back with a big roar. What do you think is going to happen here with GDP numbers, and is it anything to really worry about?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the first quarter, there are some legitimate reasons as to why we know the numbers will be down a little bit. We've talked about this both on your show as well as Glass's show in the morning, but you've got the West Coast port shutdown. You know, that slowed things down a lot more on the West Coast maybe than we felt it here in the Midwest or, of course, on the East Coast, but that had an impact on many companies. We had a very harsh winter. The Northeast was really bad with the amount of snow they got, but even when you look down south at the Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, those areas, they had a lot more ice and even a little bit of snow than what they normally have. And, of course, those cities aren't prepared for it. You know, they don't have stockpiles of salt and a whole bunch of trucks ready with snow plows to go out there and take care of it. So business and everything kind of shuts down in those states when you have that. So there's lots of good reasons for it to be down. It'll be down. The other thing that you have is people, while I think that the market is warming up to the idea that when and if the Fed does begin to increase rates, it's really a positive sign that the economy is doing well. The street still does like the easy policy and the low rates that are out there. So anytime there's a slight bit of weakness that may bump that first rate increase back a little bit, the market seems to like that as well. So the fact that it's really kind of a one-off weak economic data we're going to get from the first quarter is something that the market seems to be okay with, because they don't think that it's a sign that, hey, we have economic trouble on the horizon and we're potentially heading into a recession. And then once again, like I said, the increasing of interest rates by the Fed, it's a little more ammunition for them to continue to be patient. Even though they remove that word from their language, it doesn't mean that they're automatically increasing rates in June. And more people are starting to say, you know what, you're probably looking at the fall and the September meeting for that first rate increase.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while. The last time the Fed raised rates or a series of rate hikes was actually 11 years ago. And over that two-year period from June of 2004 through June of 2006, the Federal Reserve raised short-term rates actually 17 times. And believe it or not, folks, the S&P gained 15.5% over that period of time. So like Rod said, nothing to be fearful of. Rod, I do want to talk about the earnings. They're going to start trickling in, and I'm a little concerned because as the dollar strengthened, I think we're going to, and oil prices are down, I think the combination of those two things, jobs numbers weren't too hot either last week, but those things are somewhat worrisome. As those numbers come out, we might see a little more volatility.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, of course, all of the things that we just discussed that impact the economy to a negative degree are also going to be negative impacts to earnings. Now, not to all companies. You know, obviously, your smaller companies that are only doing business here in the United States, the strengthening dollar is not going to have a negative impact on them. So some of the things that are negatively impacting the economic data are not going to have a full impact straight across the board on earnings. But yeah, earnings are going to be weak. You know, I would say that we probably stand a better chance of being surprised by better earnings than being surprised to bad earnings. And I'm not predicting that we're going to have great earnings. What I mean by that is the fact everybody already anticipates bad earnings. Everybody is already looking at things and saying, okay, number one, obviously the energy sector. You know, we saw at the end of last year oil tumble from $100 a barrel down to $40 a barrel. We've had a nice little rally this year. We're back into the 50s, but everybody knows the energy side is going to suffer. The global companies aren't going to look as strong with that strengthening dollar. The currency conversion hurts them. But also, if you're an exporter, your foreign customers may be buying less because they're getting less today than they got from you a year ago because of the falling euro and the strengthening dollar simultaneously. So everybody's expecting earnings to be bad. That's why I say we may actually have a pleasant surprise, and maybe earnings aren't as bad as what is being anticipated, but earnings aren't going to be a great thing. People are going to be looking more, once again, future comments to verify what I said about the economy, which is that the economy is not falling off a cliff. The economy is not getting ready to go into a recession. And I believe forward statements from individual companies will help confirm. They may talk about headwinds. They may talk about being in challenging environments due to some of the things that are going on, but I don't think that you're going to hear any of the companies really talk about the future looking extremely dire and that they're buckling down for a dramatically slowing economy. I don't know that they're going to talk it up, because one of the things CEOs have done a really good job of since that tech bubble bursting is reducing expectations. You know, companies get punished when the expectations get too high and they come in underneath them. No matter, even if the expectations got up to a 30% growth in earnings and you only came in at 28%, that's a pretty good quarter-over-quarter increase. But companies get crushed when they miss expectations. So they're doing a really good job of downplaying the future without saying that, hey, the future looks extremely bleak. But they're going to push it down so that those earnings expectations get reduced, and then lo and behold, future quarters, they come in and beat those lowered expectations.
Yeah, the market's always adjusting on reality after moving on speculation. So, yeah, if we get some positive surprises, as they could translate into some additional market upside. But as we always say, you know, we can't predict where the market's going. I can't do it. Rod can't do it. You can't do it. Sorry to break it to you, but we recommend, as always, just to stay focused on your long-term goals. Keep these short-term performance numbers in perspective. Hey, Rod, last week we talked with Eric about liquidity in the bond market. We were a little bit ahead of our time there. I seemed like this week, every time I turned around, there was an article coming out about the liquidity, and that's just the amount of movement in the bond market. A shortage of treasuries and other high-quality debt instruments are whipsawing a key source of liquidity. I'm not going to get into the high weeds on it, but I think there could be something to this. What do you think?
Yeah, it appears so. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Bank, he's one of them this week that has come out and talked about that. Now, from his perspective, he believes a big part of it, and Eric has alluded to this, there are multiple things playing into this lack of liquidity in the fixed income market. But from Jamie Dimon's perspective, basically what he's saying is, you know what, the new rules and regulations are forcing us to retain more capital and encouraging us to dramatically reduce any investments that we hold on our books. Well, financial institutions used to be a huge player in that fixed income marketplace. They were big ones that were buying and selling in that. So if you take a whole bunch of their dollars out of that marketplace, they're no longer out there to be a buyer, to be a seller, to help move things. That's a big area of it. Of course, the other thing we've talked about is just the environment in general, and Eric alluded to this on the show last week, which is that a lot of your fixed income investors aren't trading fixed income. They're buying and they're holding. And as cash accumulates, they're waiting for new issuance to go out and buy the new issues. So there's not a lot of trading going on. So those forced sellers don't have a lot of buyers until those bids get low enough to where people are saying, you know what, I'm not looking to buy a bond that's not a new issuance, but gosh, if the price comes down enough, yeah, I'll take a piece of that. And that's what's eventually going to happen with some of that. That doesn't mean that it creates good liquidity, because if you're forced to reduce the selling price just to get somebody to buy it, yeah, okay, your bond moves, but you took a bigger loss than what you were anticipating when you initially went to the market and put those bonds out for bid.
And, you know, that's why we've cautioned people a little bit on bond funds, because you can't really control that versus over individual securities. So just something kind of keep in mind. Talk to your financial advisor about it, because that's something that needs to at least be discussed. Rod, I want to ask you one question, because we're going to be talking about the path of life in just a few minutes with Douglas Hughes, and then later on, the demographic truth, which you know I love to talk about. And Rod, here you are. You have a high schooler. He's a junior. You have one that's coming into high school, and we're going to be talking about peak spending and at what ages that you are a peak spender. And I can tell you, more than likely, before your kids were born, you and Kelly, well, you didn't have any money, but you probably weren't spending a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
But as your kids have gotten older, it's pretty costly trail you guys are on.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. We are definitely at the peak of our spending on the children today.
And it's only going to get worse, Rod.
Exactly. It's only going to go up as we hit college. But, of course, as you well know, Dave, yeah, my oldest, my son, who's a junior at South, he now has a vehicle, you know, so that cost me some money in gas, in insurance,
right?
Those types of things. My daughter's not very far behind. She is an eighth grader, but she'll turn 15 next fall, which means a learner's permit and then a driver's license soon to follow. So in 2 years, I'll have two people on my insurance plan, as well as putting gas in two vehicles. And then, of course, yes, college right around the corner for both of them. And, boy, that's when the expenses are really going to kick in. But, yeah, right now I'm at my current peak in my life cycle that I'm in, because teenagers, as you have alluded to many times when you discuss demographics, you know, teenagers are very expensive, not only from what we already discussed in the auto insurance and the gas for the vehicle, things like that, but the eating, the drinking and keeping food and snacks in the house, not only for your own children, but their friends that come over. So, yeah, I'm at the peak, but I'm still climbing. I'm not to the downhill side of that yet. I've got quite a few years before that. But, you know, that's what planning is all about, and planning and knowing and understanding that, hey, you know what? I've got a lot more outlays coming in the future than I have today. Therefore, I have to plan for those and be in a better position to handle that increased expense in the years to come.
And those things affect your own personal discretionary spending. You're not out buying some fancy convertible or something, because you know that's not in the cards. Or it also affects your savings rate. I mean, that's the reality of this thing. And then what happens later on, as the kids get on their own, then, wow, you're at your peak earnings years. You're able to save, and you're able to pay down debts, and that's really the path of life. So we're going to let you go. We're going to pick up Doug here in about 5 or 10 minutes, Rod. So, hey, I'll see you bright and early at CFC in the morning.
Sounds good, David. Have a great show, and I'll see you in the morning.
Thanks, man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, the book that had just hit the shelves a couple weeks ago. Myself and Doug Hughes put it together. Talk a little bit about that, and also do a little giveaway as well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So, you know, it was about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, that I thought, you know what, I'm going to write a book. And it wasn't easy. I got out and talked to some people, talked to some ghostwriters, had several drafts, and just kept coming to a dead end. Well, finally, a very good friend of mine said, what can I do to help you? And he really encouraged me and helped keep me accountable and set appointments and did things to really push me. So we did it. And it's taken about 2 years to get it done. But Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, it's a resource for adults ages 50 and over. It's out now. You can go on Amazon and check it out. You can buy it, I think it's $16.50 or something like that, and $3 or $4 on the ebook. And we talk about a lot of things. But the basis of this is, and we're going to talk more about the demographic truth, is there's a lot of people in this age bracket that need help. And every day, 10,000 people are turning 65. The peak birth rate in the baby boom generation, if you adjust for immigration, is between 1959, 1961-ish or so. So, you know, these folks are all in their 50s, and they're needing some good information. It's not meant to be a do-it-yourself guide. It's meant to be a resource to help you become better equipped when you talk to a financial professional, so you're not being, bamboozled, or you're not being, you know, told something that's not true. You know, the baby boom generation, it changed and influenced everything. You know, the hula hoop, the Ford Mustang, and retirement, we don't think it's going to be any different at all. We're already seeing some of the early baby boomers retire, because theoretically, that is 1946 through about 1964, and they're doing it differently. They're working longer, they're staying more active. It's just a different type of retirement. So it's not about filling up your time. It's about being fulfilled during your time. And next week, Jerry Sedler, the author of Don't Retire, Rewire, is going to be our guest. So that'll fit nicely with the show that we're doing today. But take your time, read through the book, use it as a resource guide. We go through everything from retirement planning, your needs and expenses in retirement, some of the retirement hurdles, available income sources maybe that you didn't even think about, retirement plan distributions, where does your money come from? You know, I've talked for people for years have said, I've accumulated this, now how do I get it back to me? Investments, insurance, risk management, asset protection, estate planning, all of it is in today's guide to retirement planning. So I wanted to do a little giveaway, and I'm going to do that now. So if you can email us at cfci.us and just say, send me the book. We'll do that, but it's going to be the ebook. We'll send you your promo code and how to get it. It's real simple, but it's, you know, it's cool. You'll have it downloaded and right there on your PC. You can even print it off yourself if you want. So go to cfci.us, contact us. We'll make sure that we get your promo code from Author House to get your free ebook, and I promise you it will be worth your time. Two great quotes were given to us for the on the back. Ed Slott, who was actually supposed to be on today's show, but because he's actually a practicing CPA, he said, I am just too busy. We're going to boot him until June, I believe. But he talks about the word retirement in today's retirees is soon, and soon to be retirees means the exact opposite for what it meant for our parents and grandparents. And he talks about the section in the book called The Big Ten Major Financial Roadblocks. He says, by itself is worth the price of admission. And then also Mary Beth Franklin, the contributing editor of Investment News, former editor of Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. She talks more about the chapter on how we get in touch with ourselves, our spouses, our significant others as we charter into uncharted territory. So hopefully you take the time to email us at cfci.us and we'll send you the promo code to get that ebook, or you can just go to Amazon or Author House or somewhere like that and pick it up. Again, it's Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and over by myself, David Hayes, and Doug Hughes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the co-author of the book, Doug Hughes, as we talk about the path of life. We're going to put some flowers around this and make it real. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. If you haven't been able to tell, we have a lot of fun at our office, Comprehensive Financial Consultants. Rod Holloway, of course, handles the equity portfolio side. We have Eric Giesler that handles the fixed income side. We have, you know, different advisors in the office, Ryan and Wayne. They've both been on the show to talk about public retirement benefits. They're going to be on again in a couple of weeks with Doug while I'm out of town at a conference. But no one else in the office has better nicknames than that person that's on the phone with us right now. Everything from TCB, taking care of business, to early but right, EBR. But my favorite by far is the big fundamental. Doug,
that's exactly right.
So the big fundamental joins us now. And Doug, I know a few weeks ago, or maybe just a week ago, you and Wayne went to speak with some young folks graduating from college soon, and you spent some time talking with those folks about the path of life. And I just thought, you know what, that's a good discussion to have on the radio. And I thought, I'm going to get Doug to just kind of walk people through what you refer to as the path of life. And then also some of the little roadblocks that come up, the things you can watch out for and the mistakes you can avoid.
Sure. Well, you know, David, I've used the path of life demonstration for years in my just in client appointments and in presentations to groups of people. And what you do is you just walk up the chalkboard and you start with a zero on the left hand and you kind of draw the edge angle, and then you have $1 million at the top. And then there's that linear line that just, you know, goes from zero, and it doesn't look like there's much growth until about year 20 or 30, and then it shoots straight up to $1 million. And a lot of people, when they start retirement planning and financial planning, that's the way they assume, is that you start with zero and all you have to do is put in 10% and the market gives you 10 and you'll get $1 million. And in a perfect world, that happens. But the path of life that we've, you know, really uncovered with the discussion and the discovery in investor behavior is that people start with the best of intentions. And this will ring true with a lot of the listeners. People start with the best of intentions. They try to figure out their allocation they're comfortable with and their contribution amounts, and they keep going and they keep going. And then, you know, a few years into it, they didn't plan with an emergency fund, which I'll take a step back and say that's, again, the beginning. And every good financial plan has a liquid emergency fund. If your financial professional is not recommending that to you, you need to find out why they're not and have a discussion. But so what happens because people don't have liquidity is that the first thing you know, and I listened to Rod earlier, a kid needs a car, or maybe two kids need cars. And if you haven't planned for that, a lot of people have this temptation to go and borrow from their 401k, either in the form of a loan or they just take a withdrawal. Well, the next thing you know, they go down the track another 5 years, let's say, and then another big cost, like fixing a roof or a refrigerator, comes along, and then people withdraw money and think they'll make it back up and they're going to be able to do this and get back on track. They're not worried about the future necessarily, and so it continues to move on. It continues to move on, and next thing you know, and we've seen this quite a bit, we have, you know, parents who need help or adult children who need help. And again, that next 5 to 10 years of savings is interrupted. And so it's the path of life. It start out zero up to a million for a lot of people. David ends up zero to maybe half or less than half of that. And it has more to do with, you know, people taking out withdrawals and loans. One place even called them toxic loans and withdrawals. And then, you know, what they started out to do so well with, because they haven't done the emergency planning, just digs into the markets. And here's the thing about emergencies and when people take money and loans against these 401ks. Here's the thing. We always wish those things happened when the markets were high, but emergencies and surprises don't happen just when the markets are high. And so sometimes people compound their losses by taking out loans or withdrawals when the market is down. And that presents an even a deeper hole to get out of. And then you have the very difficult math of recovery to get back to even. So that's kind of the path of life. People start out with a line going up one direction. And, you know, if they haven't planned right, they just start taking loans and withdrawals and loans and withdrawals. Or they change jobs or lose jobs or things along the way. And what was the number and the vision kind of gets squelched.
You know, Doug, as you talk about that, I was mindful of reminded of a case where a young man, 30 years old, came in. We happened to handle the retirement plan for their group, and he was going to take a hardship distribution for $10,000. And come to find out, the hardship was that he needed a bass boat, which I understand. You and I both fish. That's the hardship.
Which is a hardship.
It was a hardship. He was fishing from the shore. That's a hardship. So
right.
The $10,000. So I said, man, I said, that's going to cost you $50,000 by the time you're retired. He said, what? I said, yeah, you're 30 years old now. It's 7.2%. You're going to double your money every 10 years. So at 40, that 10 is worth 20. At 50, that 10 is worth 40. At 60, that 10 is worth $60,000. You know,
exactly.
And you just kind of put $80,000. You put that money together and you're like, wow. That's the cost of doing these silly, silly withdrawals. And a lot of times people will move jobs too, Doug, and they may only have $2,000 or $3,000 in their 401k, and they do exactly the wrong thing. They just have it sent to them and move on to the next job. You can roll that into your new 401k. You can roll it into an IRA. And that's maybe why 73% of Americans are saying they're going to work well beyond their typical retirement age, according to the Guide to Retirement that came out from J.P. Morgan. You know, and the longevity risk, you know, you've got to control the things you can control, and that's the big one. You know, you can control your saving and spending. You can even control your portfolio risk. You have some control over your employment, earnings, duration, and longevity if you take good care of yourself. But out of your control, completely out of your control, are market returns, policies regarding taxation, savings, and entitlement programs. That stuff's completely out of your control. So control what you can control, manage what you can't, and typically you can get that line to look a little bit more like what you talked about, a little bit smoother.
And David, one thing I would say to all the listeners out there is that there are a number of people who ignore their savings plan, and they just, you know, come and see us at the day that they're getting ready to retire or a year out or maybe even a couple years out. I just want to throw this out to everyone who's in their 40s, in their 50s, and you haven't been serious about your savings plan. This is a perfect time to just kind of, you know, lay everything out on the line and get some calculations out, just David, like you just described. What is $10,000 worth in 20 years? And look at some of those calculations. It's a perfect time to hire an and put your savings plan in a more active motion than just, hey, I'm just putting 5 or 10% and we'll see what happens. Well, you know, this is the time to do it. Don't wait until the day or the week or the year before you retire and say, hey, let's put all this together. I just admonish everyone out there listening that in your 40s and 50s is a great time to really get a handle on your savings plan, and not just your allocation, not just am I up or down, but what does your savings plan look like? And David, just like you were talking about with Rod, when people have some of those numbers and plans in front of them, when they do get to those peak spending years and then they move on to their peak income earning years, then it's a softer landing and they have a plan going forward. Fidelity recently came out with a study that said that 2/3 of investors don't stick with their plan. They get bored with it. Performance of the markets causes them to get off the plan. But we always promote and recommend that people get on a plan, review the plan, and it's not just am I up or down, but what is your savings rate? And thankfully, savings rates are improving in America.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your savings rate? And what does your savings rate look like 10, 20, 25 years from now?
Doug actually has someone that was younger come in this week. I knew them. They came in to see me because they knew me. And we were walking through just what they needed to do to stay on track, to do the right thing. And that was in with their investments, their debt, the college savings. It was with their 401k. And there was no real money for us to manage at our office. And he said, you know, how do you guys get paid? Well, I know over the last year or two, we want to help those people. Obviously, you have to get paid. So what I've been doing, and I think a lot of you guys have been too, just saying, you know what, for $250, I'm going to look at everything. I'm going to tell you exactly what I think you need to do. And you're welcome to come back once a year and talk about it. Because what we're trying to do is create long-term relationships with people just like you, that when you are 40, or sorry, now you're 40, when you are 60, you will have a nest egg for us to help you with. So
right.
I think a lot of people are a little bit intimidated by coming to a financial advisor when they don't have any money or all their money's tied up in a 401k plan. We need to try to figure out a way to bridge that gap, because I tell you, like you said, most people don't come to see us until they're right coming around the fourth turn and they're headed down the home stretch. And Doug, starting early is so important. I was looking at the retirement guide that you loaned me from J.P. Morgan, and a 25-year-old investing $5,000 a year when they're 65 at like 7% interest grew to over $1 million. If you waited, you were 35. 10 years later, you had less than half of that. It's crazy to think that that 10 years of waiting cost a person that much money. It's just incredible, but it's true. It's the power of compound returns, the eighth wonder of the world.
That's right. And, you know, the goal really is, David, for us to help people do two things, get on track and stay on track. And, if someone can help you do that, then that financial professional has been worth their weight in gold.
We're giving away an ebook, actually as many ebooks as people want. I mean, not as many as you want, but yeah, I mean, if 10 people want them, we'll give them to 10 people of the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. And it is a resource for those over 50. But I'll tell you, Doug, and you know this by helping write this book, that there's a lot of information in there that applies to 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, not just 50-plus-year-olds. So we encourage people to email us at cfci.us. Just contact us, say, I'd like the ebook. We'll send you the promotion code and how to get it. And it's about a $4 value. At least that's what I've been told. Doug, be careful, big fundamental, and I'll see you very, very soon. See you this weekend.
Okay. Have a great evening, everyone. Take care, David. Bye-bye.
When we come back, guys, we're going to talk more about the demographic truths. I'm going to give you some real-life examples that maybe you can all relate to. And really what this does is it starts to give you some idea of where our economy might be headed. I'm not going to be talking about the stock market. We're going to kind of detach the two. They're two different things, the economy. And if we have time, we'll kind of relate that to Japan and Europe as an example. I think you'll enjoy this. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. Welcome back, everyone. You know, the average American family goes through extremely predictable spending cycles. No doubt about it. How do we know this? The U.S. Bureau of Labor conducts surveys every single year on consumer expenditures. They ask you, you know, how many pizzas you ate. I mean, just everything. They ask you absolutely everything. How many times you fill up your car? What kind of insurance you bought? Everything. We know that the baby boomers, on average, entered the workforce around age 19. They got married on average at the age of 25 and a half. Actually, for men, it was 27 and women, 24. They bought their first car. They moved into an apartment. They furnished it. That period of household formation represents the fastest rate in earnings and spending growth in the entire family cycle. Basically, as you get married and start to have kids, that's when the spending really begins. Now, 2 years later, at the age of about 27 and a half, they have their first kid. And then around 29 and a half, they have their second one. The average person then buys a starter home around 33 to 34. They get their first mortgage. They purchase all the furniture to go in it. By 43, they trade up to the largest home they'll ever own, and they'll fully furnish it within 2 or 3 years after that. Now, what happens? Your kids get big. You start making decent money. You move into that big old house. Now, children start to leave the nest between 19 and 23, according to the Harry Dent Organization. And that makes the ages between 46 and 50, let's call it 48, your peak spending age. Now, Rod was talking about this. His son is a junior. His daughter is getting ready to go to high school. His spending wave is in full force over the Holloway house, and he knows it's going to continue for the next few years. But then, on average, the family spending starts to decrease sharply after the age of 48. After children leave the home, parents don't need that big home anymore. They don't need all those furniture and appliances and more cars and car insurance like Rod was talking about. They don't need the refrigerator crammed with food for their kids and their friends. The trendy tennis shoes, designer clothes that the kids grow out of, it seems like overnight, all go away. Now, we typically mourn the loss of our kids as they move on, but then we realize, holy smokes, we've got it made. We can do whatever we want. We're making good money. It's terrific. We have great discretionary income. And that's really the beginning of this high discretionary spending for parents. Now, at the end of that spending wave and your kids leave the home, what generally happens that first couple of years, parents will say, all right, we've got it made now. We're going to start spending money on us, not them. So Rod, he goes out and buys a Harley Davidson. I mean, the peak age of buyers for Harleys, they're about 48 years old. And that's because on average, that's when their kids start to leave the home. It's interesting how it works, but it's very, very predictable. So as I look at where we are today, 1961, arguably, is the peak of the baby boom burst. Now, that is adjusted for immigration. We had a lot of immigrants come in during that time period to push the peak of the boomers back a little bit. So, if that was 1961, and now we are in 2015, that means the peak of the boomers are around 54, and their kids are in their mid to late 20s. So, that means they have begun to leave the home. They're out off the payroll, so to speak. And guess what happens? Mom and dad start focusing on themselves. Now, yeah, they may go out and buy the Harley, the convertible, and things like that, but within a year or two after, they start to focus on retirement. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean go out and borrow more money? No, it means pay down that debt, pay down the mortgage, pay down the credit cards, cars, all that stuff, maybe even helping with student loans on the kids. And they're saving like wild people. They find that, hey, we can actually save a full paycheck. You save your paycheck, we'll live off ours. That's the way it works. So don't get discouraged. Don't get caught up on the fact, and I've been running a commercial like this for a while, that we haven't gotten started yet, because you can really make some hay once the kids leave the home and you have all this discretionary income. You know, as you look at things like potato chip purchases, it's so easy to predict that, you know, you'll peak out of buying potato chips when your kids are about 14. Your peak electricity use is when your kids are like Rod's kids' age, you know, between 14 and 19. There's a lot of things you can predict. So here's my concern. As the boomers go on through this spending wave and they get into where they're starting to spend less and pay down debts, then what could happen? Our economy could continue to be slow. You know, we just came off of a quarter where it's likely we have zero GDP growth. Last year we clocked in at little over, what, two, not quite three, not too bad. I don't think we're going to see 3, 4, 5% GDP like we did back in the 90s when the boom was just underway. I mean, a lot of spending was going on into the 2000s. I just don't think it's going to happen. So I think we're going to continue to see low growth, which means low interest rates. Even if the Fed starts to tighten up a little bit, that's the overnight rate of borrowing. That doesn't necessarily affect the 30-year Treasury too terribly much, or the 10-year Treasury. That is the capital markets, and that's more focused on or related to growth in the market. So just think about it. If you're sitting in your mid-50s, the late 50s, and your kids are grown, think 10 years ago. Did you have any money? Were you spending a lot on the kids? Now what do you have? You have a lot of money. You're able to save. You're paying down your debts. It's just the way it goes. So here we are. We're going to continue to move through this. for the next several years until people get into their retirement years and they're working longer. Now, you might say to yourself, like me, I went to IU, I went to Greenville, went to IU. I didn't have my son until I was 31. But we're talking about the average American. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that didn't go to college, got out in the workforce right away, got married early or not married, and had kids early. So when you average it all together, it still seems to be pretty much the case for the echo boomers and their what they're doing, which is getting married and having kids at similar ages. They're pushing it back a little bit, just like the boomers pushed it back from the Bob Hope generation about two to three years. The echo boomers pushing it back a little bit further, too. So I just thought I'd take some time, talk to you about the family dynamics, the predictable spending patterns we all go through, and how that could relate to our economy. Now, I'm not predicting the stock market. I'm just talking about the economy. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to wrap up the big show and preview what's coming next week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. My producer, Jim, let me down when he did not allow me to make my final point when it comes to slowing of spending and saving. And why? Because 70% of GDP in America is based on consumer spending. Case in point, by the numbers from our friend Mick Higley, the personal savings rate in the U.S. was almost 6% as of the end of February in 2015, up from 0.8% in 2005. So we're seeing it happen. As these guys are getting older, gals are getting older, they're saving more, paying down debts, and 70% of GDP is based on consumer spending, and that's why I think the economy will continue to be sluggish for, a while. Hey, next week, Jerry Sedler, the author of Don't Retire, Rewire, is going to be my guest. We've had Jerry on several times, and she does a great job. Her book helps you identify the drivers that get you out of bed every single morning and head to work. And it's why you work beyond the paycheck. That's really what the book tries to answer. And Jerry does a great job of just helping you understand that and getting you motivated to take the necessary steps to prepare mentally for retirement. You know, we talk about the financial side all the time. I'm not real good on the mental side of it. A lot of folks I worry about, they end up being great in retirement, no problem. Some, I thought you're never going to have any problem being retired, and they really struggle with it. So Jerry Sedler will be on next week, and she'll offer up some great advice. I promise you that. Hey, one more plug for the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. Go check it out. You can get it on Amazon, Author House, all those places. Just type it in. It'll pop right up. It's kind of cool. It's about $16.50, I think, to get it, and $3.99 on the ebook. But if you're listening to the show, you can always email us at cfci.us and get your free ebook. So cfci.us, contact us, get your free download. You can print it off yourself. It's going to be hopefully a very useful tool for you as you prepare for retirement. Guys, we appreciate you so much. Again, next week, Jerry Sedler, Don't Retire, Rewire, will be on the show. It'll be a great one, so you won't want to miss it. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.